We begin the current daf Masechta Ksubos, daf Mem Gimel. We begin 6 lines down from the top of the Amud, where the Gemara discusses a related topic that will come into discussion of our Mishnah, which focuses around primarily the shvach, what a girl makes when she's a katana. Who does that go to? Does it go to the father? Does it go to herself? Can it at times go to the brothers? Says the Gemara, says Boi minei Reb Avinah Reb Sheshes. Reb Avinah asked Reb Sheshes the following question: Bas hanizaynis min ha'achen. A daughter that gets her sustenance from her brothers. Now, that's actually what's called a Tanai Ksuba. It's one of the conditions that are written in the Ksuba, which is explained later on in this parak in Nafnan Beis and Mabeis, where the husband writes to the wife in the Ksuba that Benon Nukvin the Havin L'chiminai, that your female children that you're going to have from me, Inyun Yahavin Yasmin Bevesi, they will stay in my house, and they'll be fed from my properties until they're taken by men. So therefore, Rabbi Levin is asking for Rav Sheshes in the situation where the father passed away and the inheritance goes to the sons. Now, however, based on the condition of the ksuba, the daughters, although they don't get from the properties, until they get married, they get fed from the estate, which is basically the brothers are feeding them. So the question is, Maisa Delami. Now, when this girl makes money, who does that go to? As the Gemara explains the question, do we say b'makom av kaimi that the brothers are essentially taking over the role that the father had up until now? It was the father's estate. Now he's dead. They take it over, and therefore we say ma hasam ma'isi de'la av, just like when the father was alive, when he was feeding his daughter. So then her earnings would go to the father. So chanami ma'isi de'la av, and so the same thing would be over here. They're taking over his role. They're feeding her. So therefore, her ma'isi adayim, her earnings go to the brothers. Idilma, or maybe he says that loy damalav. You cannot compare the brothers to the father, because hasa midi de misazna. There, the daughter is being fed by the father. So in payment for that, that goes that the daughter's earnings go to the father. But hachalav midi tu misazna. But here, she's not being fed by the brothers. Rather, it's the condition of the ksuba that's mandating them to feed her. Maybe there we don't say that her earnings go to the brothers. Yes, they're feeding her like the father does, and just like then we say that, okay, so then her earnings go to the father because they're being fed from that. So the same thing should apply to the brothers. Not true, because they're not feeding her. It's really the father, through the condition of the ksuba, that's feeding her, albeit now that he's dead, and therefore maybe then we don't say that the mahar ma'isei daim go to the brothers. So Rav Sheshes responded to Rav Avinah. He says, Tinisto, I could resolve this from a Mishnah later on, Davat Tzad Hamad Beis. Mishnah says as follows. Aman nizaynis minichsi yisayim. Similar to this Tanai Ksuba of a daughter being fed after the father passes away, a widow gets fed from the assets of the orphans, which is also Tanai Ksuba, as the Gemara later on explains in this parak, where the husband writes in the Ksuba, Atahe yasu bevesi, you will stay in my house, and you'll be fed from my estate, all the days that you're a widow. Now, so, and the Mishnah there says, and her earnings go to the widows, go to the orphans, meaning to the sons. Obviously, we see that the sons are in the same role that the father had, because we say over there that just like her earnings go to her husband because he feeds her, so to now, when the sons are feeding their mother, who's the almana, her earnings go to them. So therefore, we should say the same thing here by the daughter. Just like when the father feeds her, her earnings go to the father. Now when the sons feed her, so her earnings should go to the sons. So on that, the Gemara asked Rav Avinah, asked Rav Sheshes, me dummy, can you compare that Mishnah by almana, which seemingly is the same thing of Tanai Ksuba that goes to the father, now goes to the son, to the daughter? But almanasi le'nicha le'bharvacha, his widow, he's not interested in her so much making a lot of money to have more expansive than what she needs. So therefore, yes, if she's getting fed by the estate, so good. If you make earnings, then you got to bring it back and you give it back to our sons, the orphans, and they get that money. But his daughter, he prefers her to get, besides the parnasa, besides that she's getting for her nedunya, that she's getting fed by the estate, the husband actually prefers that his daughter should keep her earnings too. And that's because she needs this to be able to move on and get married, and she needs that besides the nedunya, where that's a nadin that someone should want to get married to her, he also wants her to have more money, and because she's moving on, whereas the widow, she doesn't need more than what she's being fed with, and therefore you can't compare the two cases. Maybe by almana, like that Mishnah says, her mice them go to the orphans, but regarding the daughter, no, he wants, besides the fact that she's getting fed, that her mice them should be kept by herself too, and therefore you can't compare the two. Now that the Gemara responds back to that. The way you're refuting Rav Sheshes' raya was because you're saying that's by almana. But by Bita, actually, he would want her to keep her ma'ase dayim. So you want to say that the husband prefers his treatment for his daughter more than his widow? But if Amr Ababa Amr Biyasi, he says, also almana eats labas, that the sages equated a widow in regards to the daughter. In other words, if someone passes away and he left over a widow and a daughter, is kabas etzel achen benachasim u'atin, is the same correlation, the equivalent as when there's a daughter and brothers, meaning sons and daughters, when there's very little money that was left over in the estate. Meaning which, as Rashi explains, as the Gemara explains in Baba Basra, it means that there's not enough of parnasa for 12 months. Where there the halach is, mahabas etzel achen, just like the daughter by the brothers, when there's very little money in the estate. Habas nizaynis, the halach is that the daughters can get fed from what's left over. Va'achin yishol al b'sachem, and the brothers, although generally the nechasim, actually the Yerusha goes to the sons, and not to the daughters, but when there's very little, it's the daughters that get to eat that what's left over, and the brothers have to go knocking on doors to collect money. Afal money it's labas. So too does Rabbi Yossi say, the same thing is when there's a widow and a daughter. That Alman and Nizaynis, it's the widow that gets fed from what's there. V'habas tishal b'sachem, the daughter has to go knocking on doors. So how can you say that there's preferential treatment from the one who's passing away to his daughter than his widow, when you see clearly not like that? We see when there's a widow and a daughter, it's the widow that gets fed and the daughter has to go knocking. Just like a daughter with sons, that the sons knock and the daughter gets fed. So I think Mar says that's not a question. In other words, it doesn't refute the refutation of Rababa. Because la'inin zilusa manasa difala, you're right. Regarding degradation, the husband prefers the treatment of his widow. Because a daughter or a young girl, she can go knocking on doors. But for his widow to go knocking, it's not appropriate. And therefore, yes, she gets to eat and the daughter goes knocking. But in harvacha bita difala, but regarding what we're discussing, which is getting to keep not only that you're getting fed from the estate, but also to keep your earnings, that actually he would prefer only by his daughter, because she needs that moving on to get married. But his widow, she doesn't need more than that, and therefore if she's getting fed from the estate, and the earnings she has should be brought back into the family, which goes to the orphans. And therefore, the refutation of Rababa to Rav Sheshes still stands, and that is, he's saying, you don't have a raya to what you're saying. You wanted to prove that her Maisidan would go to the brothers, in the case of where she's Nezainis from the brothers, and your raya was from Almana, there's no raya, because Almana, there he doesn't prefer her to have Ravacha, and that's why her Maisidan go to the sons. But by Bas, maybe it would be that he prefers that, and therefore her Maisidan actually would go to herself and not to her brothers. Now, Masa Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef asked to Rav Sheshes' interpretation that he said that the Maisidan do go to the brothers, and he asked on this from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Maisi Deha Umitsiyasa, that the earnings and the findings of a girl, Afa Pishle Gavsa, even if it wasn't collected yet, but it already was done, so Maisa Av Harein Shalachan. So if Maisa Av, if the father dies, Harein Shalachan, then it goes to the brothers. So although, and this stands in contrast to its Reb Shimon, that although he said regarding other areas like the Knas of Ein Smefata, that it's only when the father collects it, then it's considered mamun for the sons to inherit their father. But if it would be before that, if the father dies, then actually it would not go to them. But that stands in contrast to Maisidayim and Mitzia, where that is elements of mamun. And therefore, once it's already there, even if it wasn't collected yet, it's already considered the father's, and therefore if he dies, it would go as inheritance to the brothers. Now on that, Rabbi Yosef asks, Taimu de b'chaya av, the inference you can make is, because she made these earnings or found this metzia when the father was alive. So if the father was alive, so the father immediately inherits it, and therefore he can then bequeath it to his sons when he dies. But the diuk is hola achra misa sa'av, but if let's say she made these maisi adayim, she made these earnings after the father was already dead, then it sounds like it would be la'atzma, then it would go to herself. My lav b'nizaynis, isn't it even talking about that she's being fed from the estate. From the fact that the Tana had to say this halacha, because there seems to be no other chiddush, but that even if she's getting fed from the estate, it's only if she made these earnings when the father was alive, then the father gets it, and then the children could inherit it. But if she made it after the father was dead, then it sounds like that even though she's getting fed from the estate, it would not go to the brothers, not like Rav Sheshes. So I think Mar says, like, no, it's not a question of Sheshes. It's talking about Bishayin and Nizenis. It's talking about when she's not being fed from the estate. For example, if let's say the father left over no estate, so there's nothing for her to be fed of, and therefore, that's what we're saying, that her Maisi Daim then would go to herself. Well, that the Gemara asks, E Bishayin and Nizenis, if the Mishnah is talking about that she's not being fed from the estate, well then, my lamembra, what would be the purpose of the Mishnah saying this halacha? In other words, as Rashi points out, both variables, both elements that this halacha could be saying, seemingly have no chiddush. In other words, it cannot be saying for the purpose of the diuk, which is to say, as if let's say she makes this after the father died, that it goes to herself, because of course it's going to herself. What would be the hava mina? She's not even getting anything from this state, and there's no father here, so of course she gets to keep it. And if the purpose would be to say the actual halacha itself, not for the diuk, not for the inference, but rather to say that what she made when the father was alive, that then, as the Mishnah says, that goes to the brothers, well, that's obvious, because once she makes the earnings, even before it's collected, the father already had the rights in it, because it's mamon, in contrast to knas, which is the case by Inus Mefata. So, of course, that's going to go to the brothers. Now, as the Gemara points out, that afilu mandam, even according to the one that says in Masechtas Gittin, where it's machlekes over there, that yachal rav loy me'le'evet, that even according to the one that says that a master could say to his servant, I say, you have to work for me, and I'm not going to feed you. But that is at most, in the case over there, where it's talking about a non-Jewish slave. The leksiv be'imach, where the pasuk doesn't tell you that he has to be a slave with you, meaning that you have to feed him. But regarding a Jewish slave, which it says in Bayikra, the term imach, that he works with you, then loy, they're according to everybody, you can't tell him to work for you and still not feed him. So Koshkin Bitai, all the more so Bitai, we obviously can understand that the actual halacha itself, as we said, there's no chiddush. Because of course the son's inherited, like any mamon. And therefore when she makes the ma'isi daim, even though it wasn't collected yet, it's the father's to bequeath to the sons. So it must be coming to tell us the chiddush of the inference. But if you're telling me it's talking about that she's not getting fed, and that's the chiddush of the inference, to say that then she gets to keep it, what type of chiddush is that? Of course she gets to keep it. Even a slave doesn't get treated that way to say that we're not going to feed you, but yet you have to give us your earnings. And all the more so a daughter. So if you're saying it's etoma in nizainis, how do we understand the halach of the Mishnah? So Amar Rabbah Ula, he says that truthfully, the primary purpose of this halach of the Mishnah that we just quoted is for the inference. To tell us that her ma'isi daim after the father died, I mean, it's only when the father is alive that we're saying it goes to the father, then to the brothers. But the purpose why we quoted that halacha is to tell us the inference, but after the father died, then it goes to herself. And truthfully, it's talking about where she's not being fed by the brothers, not being fed by this state. Now, then the question was, so then what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? She's not going to be worse than Eved Ivri. Of course the brothers are not going to get it. So that Rabbi Ullah says that Leinitzcha Ella, that the purpose of this inference chiddush, what was necessary for it to say that she does get to keep it, is only coming to tell us in the case of Lahadafa, when her earnings are more than the what she's being fed from the estate. And that was a necessary chiddush to say that doesn't go to the brothers. You're right. You can't say, I say, imi v'nizanach. The brothers can't say, look, we're not feeding you, but you still have to give us your earnings, because even the Eved Iri doesn't have that. But the chiddush was necessary to say that even if she has enough, meaning to say that even if, let's say, that what would be in the case of what she has enough for her sustenance, she's earning more than that, that maybe we would have thought to say that the brothers do get. On that, we're saying that no, even that she gets to keep. However, Amar Rava, he says, Gavar Rabbi Rav Yosef, he says that such a great person like Rav Yosef, who he's the one that asked this question from the Mishnah, didn't he know that there's this principle of making more than what you need to survive, and that he could have contrived and given such an answer and said that you're right, it's talking about b'she'in in the zayin, that she's not being fed, but that there is hadafa, and that of course that could have been a teretz of how to be miyashiv the dik of the Mishnah. However, in spite of that, b'kamaisiv to yufta, he does ask the question from the Mishnah. In other words, what Rav is trying to point out is that obviously Rav Yosef knew that there is a good question from the Mishnah. Because if it's the way you're answering that, that there is an understanding of what the chiddush of the deek would be in the case of Hadafa, where she's making more than what she needs for Mizainis, and therefore maybe that she could have to give to the brothers, even though they're not giving her, because essentially it's like what they're giving her and what she's earning, it's just the excess that they would get, that Rav Yosef knew that you could say such an idea. So Elam Rav, or rather Rav says, that must be Rav Yosef was asking a different question from the Mishnah on Rav Sheshes, because that question, of course he would know that answer. Rather, Rav Yosef masnitin gufa kashle. The problem that Rav Yosef had was the actual Mishnah itself, because the Ketani, the Mishnah, tells us, in that case, not the way we had been learning the question up until now, and that is, what was the purpose of this halacha? It couldn't be for the halacha itself, because that's obvious, must be for the inference, and then we said, but the inference itself would be obvious if it's einin zainis. So that Rav is saying, no, that wasn't his question. Rather, his question was, the Mishnah says, maisi deo mitziyasa. It says that regarding her earnings and her, if she finds a lost object, which both of these are financial gains that she gets, so on that the Mishnah said that afa pishalei gavsa, that even though it wasn't collected yet, so then we say again it's considered the father's, and therefore if he dies at that point, even before it's collected, he would go ahead and bequeath it as inheritance to his sons. Now that the question is, what was the purpose of the Mishnah quoting the case of Mitziyasa? But you can't say, which that was the whole purpose of the Mishnah saying this, in contrast to what Reb Shimon had said earlier of Knas, Afa gav shaloi gav, so that even though it wasn't collected yet, but Mitziyasa miman gavya. What does that mean? It doesn't make sense. You can't say that the lost object wasn't collected yet, because that's not, earnings are something, you're waiting for your paycheck, it's not, wasn't paid up yet. But a lost object, when you find it, it's when you already have it. So elalav achikama, so rather Rava says that this is what Reb Yisrael was asking. Must be what the Mishnah says in adding the case of Mitzia, is to tell you that Maisia Dea Kim Mitzi Asa, that her earnings is like her lost objects, to tell you, Ma Mitziyasa Bechaya Avla'av, just like her findings, when the father's alive, it goes to the father, and it would go to the inheritors. La'acha Mises Av La'atma, but after the father's dead, it goes to herself. As Rashi points out, a lost object that she finds, it's obvious that goes to herself. And the truth is, because even when the father's alive, the father only inherits it if, only the father only gets the rights in it, only if she's actually provided by sustenance by his table. As the Gemara says about Metziah on the Yud Beis and Bezin, because of the principle of Eva. And that is because since he doesn't have to feed her, as the Gemara actually later teaches on in this parak, that the father doesn't have to feed his daughter, if you would say that her Mitzias would go to herself, so you would say, haha, you take your own earnings? Fine, go ahead and keep your findings, and I'm not going to feed you anymore. Now, so therefore, it's only because of that Eva, that enmity, that would be caused. But regarding the brothers, who they have to feed her from the Nechasim of the Yav, that most definitely when she finds a lost object, that there's no principle over here of Eva, because they would have to feed her anyway, and therefore, of course, the lost object goes to herself. So af ma'isia de'anami b'chayo av lav. So too we can make the following comparison. So to her earnings that when her father's alive it goes to her father. La'achar misa sa'av la'atzma. But when the father has passed already, then it goes to herself. So Rava says that was the inference that Rabbi Yisrael was making from a Mishnah that obviously her ma'isia da'im go to herself, even if she's nezainis minichsi yisaimim, exactly like the correlation of her mitzia, which even if she would become nizanyas from the nichsi yisaimim, obviously her mitzia would go to herself. The comparison, and that's why he brings in the case of mitzia, which doesn't really have application of afapish legavsa, to teach a comparison to ma'isi yadayim. And again, that was Rav Yosef's question on Rav Sheshes, which does refute Rav Sheshes' interpretation. And actually, itmanami, so too we learned, armi vidim rav, basa nizanyas menachin, a daughter that does get provided sustenance from the brothers, meaning after the father had died, which is one of the Tanai Ksuba, Maisidela Atzma. Her earnings do go to herself. And again, as the Gemara had said earlier from Reb Avina, that there's no comparison to Almana. Now, Rav Kahana says, my time, what's the reason? Simply translated, that means to say, what's the reason why her Maisidim go to herself when she's getting fed from the orphans? But the way Taisus explains is that one thing that was so obvious from this sugi is that midaraisa biblically, it seems like everybody agrees that it would go to herself. Only question was, rabbinically, if he would have instituted that it should go to the brothers, like we say it goes to the father. But the question is, either way, is that why is it so obvious that the earnings of the daughter go to herself and it doesn't go to the brothers. So that the Gemara says, like it says the pasuk in Vayikra, because it says v'hisnachaltim oisam, which that's in the context of avadim kananim, of non-Jewish slaves. The Torah says that you should inherit them levnechem achareichem, to your sons that come after you. Inference is oisam levnechem. When you're told my people to give them over as inheritance, it's only slaves that you give to your sons. But you can't give your daughters over to your sons. Magadet comes to teach us that a person cannot give over as an inheritance the rights that the Torah gave him in his daughter, libnai to his son. And that's why it was so obvious that her earnings go to herself, because although that's a schus av in his daughter, that's only for the father. He cannot bequeath that as inheritance to his sons. Now, but Maskabel Rabba asks on this, and he says, Maybe say when the pasuk is saying that you cannot be meirish a schus of the av in the daughter to the ben of oisim lebneichem lebneisechem lebneichem. Maybe say that's only things like when the daughter gets seduced, the knasis or other penalties, the chavalis or when she gets hurt. Maybe there is wahakasim adav that the pasuk is saying. That the pasuk is saying that regarding her oinsin and chavalis, but regarding her earnings, which that's something that's very common, that a girl should make money, and which is a loss of money for the estate because she's being fed from the estate. Maybe there we should actually say that it does go to the brothers, because although it's the pasuk says that he cannot bequeath his daughter to his sons, maybe that's only for things that are not so common, but things which are common, normal things, maybe they're actually that he would be able to give that over. And actually, v'chein tana Rav Chanina, Sotar Rav Chanina actually taught this in his version of the Braisa, that is talking about pito habas because of chavalis. Actually, the pasuk is talking about only regarding pitoi and knas and chavalis. Regarding those things, he cannot bequeath that schus in his daughter to his sons. But actually, something like ma'aseh dayim, actually, he does give that over to their sons. And therefore, that's where the Gemara leaves over that question. That seemingly, why would that be so obvious that the father wouldn't be able to give it over? Maybe it's only for things like what we had quoted. But for ma'aseh dayim, actually, he would be able to give over to his sons. Now, however, but the Gemara does ask on what these two who had asked, and one that actually said this as the interpretation of the pasuk, that chavalos, regarding when the daughter gets injured, where we said that maybe that's where the pasuk saying that the father, what he has those rights in his daughter, that doesn't go to the son, but maybe Ma'isdem does. But on that, the Gemara asks on that one case, tsar de gufaninu, but when the daughter gets injured, that's pain of the body. Now, tsar, pain of the body, actually the Torah does not merit a father to have rights in. Actually, as the Gemara says in Baba Kama and Perek HaChayvel, that if there is a injury in one's son or daughter who are minors, you have to make what's called a skuli. You have to put that aside in a separate bank account to have for them. And that is, the father doesn't get that. So why are we saying chavalis as something that is the father's, and that would be something that wouldn't be given over to the sons in contrast to Ma'aseh Dayim? And that Amar Yisrael Bar Chanina, we're talking about as we're talking about Beis, she pitzah b'fanah. We're talking about that she got injured in her face, which that depreciates her value. And that is because if there would be such a thing, that actually would go to the father, because that's his rights, because he could sell her as a maidservant, which that depreciates her value now that she got injured in her face. That monetary value would go to the father, and that's something that maybe the pasuk is saying that doesn't go to the sons. But again, they had asked and said that, however, maybe something like Ma'aseh Dayim, which is more common, maybe that actually would go to the sons. Now, continuing on this same halacha, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Zera. Rav Zera said that Amar Rav Masna Amar Rav. Amar Lan, something actually, it's Amar Reb Zera. Amar Masna Amar Rav, which Rashi points out that Reb Zera and Rav Zera are the same person. It's just that when he was in Bavel, before he went up to Eretz Yisrael to learn by Rabbi Yechanan, when he was in Bavel, there's no rabbinic ordination in Bavel. So therefore he was called Rav Zera. And those who say that when he said over this statement was before he had rabbinic ordination in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore he was called Rav Zera. And some say that it was actually said after Yatzmicha, and therefore it was Reb Zera. But either way, it's Reb Zera that says that Basan is Zaynus Min HaAchen, a daughter that gets fed from the brothers, Ma'aseh Del Atzma, as we said before, her earnings go to herself. The Chassidic says in the pasuk, "V'snachaltem oisim levnechem achareichem," that you should inherit them, this davadim kananim, to your sons after you, which are oisim levnechem. Only slaves go as inheritance. V'lebneisechem levnechem, but not your daughters to your sons. Magid she'enodem meirish chosbita levnoi, as we said before, comes to teach that one cannot go ahead and give over as a yerusha the rights that he has of his daughter to his sons. Now, Amalei Avime Bar Papi, Avime Bar Papi said to him, but Shakud Amra, Shakud said this. So the Gemara asked Shakud Mano, who's Shakud? That's Shmuel. Now, the reason why Shmuel was called Shakud was because the halacha is like Shmuel regarding dinim, regarding monetary law. And therefore, he was Shakud, he was diligent regarding his halachic statements to say, make sure he has the appropriate halacha. Now, that the Gemara asks, Shakud said it, Harava, Marav said it, as we just quoted before. Say rather that Shakud also said this halacha, that they both agree that it doesn't get, that even though she's getting fed, and there, usually that's a schos of the av, that if she's getting fed, that then her maizadam go to him, but that's not something that he gives over to the sons, and therefore her maizadam go to herself. This is what Nardoi said. Who he resolved originally, as we start off this daf, that comparing the case of a daughter to a widow, and he said that her ma'aser dam actually go to the brothers, just like the ma'aser dam of the mano when she's getting fed from the state, go to the orphans. However, Avashi, he says, actually, halacha falsak rav, that her ma'aser dam go to herself. And the Gemara concludes, that although she's nezainis from the achim, but her ma'aser dam go to herself. Now the Gemara continues with the next mission, again continuing the theme of the previous discussions of regarding the rights that the father has in his daughter. So the Mishnah tells us, Hama'aras is bita v'girsha, as we learned in the previous Mishnah, that regarding all the different elements that a father has rights in, and one of them is to marry off his daughter. So the Mishnah tells us that Hama'aras is bita v'girsha, if someone gets his daughter engaged, and then she gets divorced from the engagement, irsa v'nis armala, then she gets engaged again, and she gets widowed from the engagement. So that the Tanakhama says, ksubasa shalai, the ksuba, with that's the money that the woman gets when she's divorced or widowed, that money goes to the father. And that's from both Arison, from both engagements, both of them are going to the father. Now, as Rashi points out, then obviously the Tana of this Mishnah holds that there is a ksuba even for just Arison. And moreover, obviously we have to be talking about that she's either a katana or a naira when the father is the one that has the rights to marry her off. However, his siya v'gersha, if he marries her off, not just erisin, not just kedushin, but rather nisuin, which is the second phase of marriage, and then she gets divorced, and then he siya v'nisarma, then she gets married again, she gets widowed, ksubasa shalah, then both of the ksubas go to her, and the reason is from the moment that she gets married, she gets removed from the father's domain, and the ksuba, the rights of the ksuba go after when they're collected. And the collection is after that she already was married, meaning she's married and then later she gets divorced, later gets widowed. And we do not go after when it was written to say that since the first ksuba was written, which was still in the father's domain, that goes to the father. Tanakhama says, no, we go after when it's collected. He says, no, harishayna shel av, the first, because we're talking about two consecutive cases, which she gets married, then divorced, married, then widowed. So Yehuda says the first ksuba goes to the father, which the Gemara will explain the reason of his opinion. And the second one goes to her. Now, Amar Lai, but the Chacham responded back to Rabbi Yehuda, but Mishesi, it's not true, because from the moment she gets married, in Lavi Rishus, but the father has no rights over her, and therefore, even the first ksuba, when she collects it, goes to her and not to the father. Now, the Gemara makes an awareness of the case of the Mishnah, that Taima Dehisiya V'Girsha, it sounds like that the Mishnah purposefully changed. It wanted to talk about two ksubas, which it could have said a unilateral type of a case, which is it gets engaged and divorced, engaged and divorced, or both widowed. But it doesn't say that. It says time of the siyah of a girsha. It says that she got married, then divorced, his siyah of a nisarmala, and she got married and then widowed to change the case. Aval nisarmala trezimni, but if let's say both of them were that she got widowed, the understanding that it sounds like from our Mishnah is that sulay chazal in suvei, that then she wouldn't be able to get married anymore. And the reason would be because then she already have established a chazaka that she kills her husbands that she marries. And therefore, the Tana was precise in the case that he described, not to say that one of punishment, which would cause negative outcomes. And the Agav Urchi Kesos Montana Karebian, and parenthetically, incidentally, the Tana is pointing out to us that he holds a Karebi, the Amma betrays him, they have a chazaka, that he says that after two times, not like Rishim Gamliel, that it says three times, that after two times one has already established a chazaka. And therefore, when we're discussing a halacha unrelated to this, we're just discussing regarding who gets the ksuba, which is the machlekes b'din rabbanon, the Tana decided to tell us, first of all, the halacha is anonymously like Rebbe, who he says in Masechta Yevamah is that if a woman gets married to one man and he dies, and the second man and then he dies, then she cannot get married to a third husband, because already with two times she has established chazakah. So that's why we said the case in where there were one was divorced and one was widowhood, because if it was both widowed, then actually that would be a case of paronius, which we don't want. And we're telling you by not saying that case, that obviously if it was both amanas, that then actually she would have created a chazaka, which again is like Rebbe, that after two times already established a chazaka. Now the Gemara says that Rebbe Yehuda Omer, in our Mishnah, Rebbe Yehuda said, Harishayna Shalav, that the ksuba from her first husband that she was married to, that goes to the father, but the second one is the one that goes to her. So the Gemara says, Maitam Yehuda, what's the reason Rebbe Yehuda? Seemingly the Chachamah are correct. And that is because from the moment that she gets married to the first one, and only later when she gets divorced from him does she collect the ksuba, then she's already married. Once she's married, she has nothing to do with the father. So why would the father collect the ksuba from the first marriage, which she ultimately got married? So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Tavaya, they both say, the reason being is because Hayul Mishas Erisin, since from the moment she gets engaged to the first husband, is when there's already an obligation of a ksuba to this woman. So at that moment, Zoch Ben Ahav, the father already has the right to that, because she's not married yet then. You're right, later point in time she gets married, and only later does she collect the ksuba, but at that point in time already, is when she's just engaged, is already the obligation. That obligation is a schlis that the father has, because his daughter not married yet, wasn't removed yet from his rishus. Now, however, as Rashi points out, but when she gets engaged to the second man, so why doesn't he collect that too? Because it's already from just engagement that the obligation starts. That's not the case, because we're talking about that she got married to both of the husbands. She had nisuin. So the moment she gets married to the first husband, that already removes the father's rishus forever. So even though she gets divorced from that one and then gets engaged to the second one, she has nothing to do with the father. But the first one, since from the time of Erisin, is when there's the obligation of the ksuba, and she's still in the father's domain, that's why the father gets the first ksuba, according to Behuda. Now that must have Rava. Rava asks on this interpretation of Rabba and Yosef from the following brisa. Behuda Omer, Behuda says, Harishayna Shalav, as he says in the Mishnah, that the first ksuba from the first husband goes to the father. However, Umayder Behuda, Behuda agrees, B'ma'aris es bito kishikitana, if let's say he gets his daughter engaged when she's a minor, which he has the rights over her, Ubagra, and then during the engagement she becomes a begeris, which she becomes an adult, and she totally leaves the father's rishos. Va'achkach nisus, and only then does she get married. She'ein lavi rishos, but that the father has no rights over her, and that the ksuba goes to the daughter. But amai, according to Rabbi Amvi, said, why would that be? Hachanami lema hoyil mishas erisin zalcha ben av. We should say that who cares that she became a begeris during the engagement, and that by the time she was married, she was a begeris out of his rishos. Who cares? The moment she got engaged was when the obligation of the ksuba started. Then she was still a katan, and the father already inherited that, already had the rights in that. So why would he lose the ksuba in that case? So Ella iyid mahochit, rather. So the Gemara says that if we're going to say this interpretation of Rabbi Yosef, it was as follows. Rabbi Yosef, Damar Tavaya, they both say that not because it's from the time of Erisin, but hoyle ubeshusay nichtavin. It's because that the ksuba was written when she was still in his domain. Meaning the first ksuba is written right before Nisuin. Now, since it was right before Nisuin, so regarding the case of our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says it goes to the father, because she's still in his domain. But that makes sense now why in the Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda says if she became a begeris sometime during the engagement before Nisuin, so that means to say by the chuppah, that's right before when the ksuba is written, that wasn't written in his rishus anymore, because she became a begeris sometime during the engagement, before the ksuba is written, and that's why there Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it's going to go to her and not to the father, but generally goes to the father because right before Nisuin, and that's when the ksuba is written, and then she's still b'shusa av. Now Rashi just points out one thing, that the reason why it says hoyl b'shusa nichtavin in the plural is because it's going on the money, on the mana and the mesayim of the ksuba, but there's only one ksuba being written, but it's written plural regarding the money. So therefore, that's the understanding in Rabbi Yehuda. But now the Gemara asks, so we said that regarding the rights of the father, we see that that doesn't go after the moment of Eris, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because even Rabbi Yehuda said that he agrees that if the daughter was engaged when she was a ketan and then she became a begeris, so as the Gemara pointed out, that obviously goes after when the ksuba is written. But however, the Gemara asked the following question, Umigva me'emes gavya, but regarding collecting from nechasim mishubadim, which means to say that if, let's say, this husband has an estate. Now, the ksuba has a lien for her to get paid from the ksuba from the estate, and that starts from the moment when the obligation starts. But the question is, when does that start? In other words, from the time she gets engaged, which that was the time when the obligation of the Tarkana Drabbanon begins, that there's an obligation of a ksuba. Now, we said regarding this halacha of the rights of the father, that only starts by the moment that it's written, which is before the nisuin. But now, in a related discussion, there's a question is, but when can she collect from the lekuches? If people purchase from her husband's estate, let's say 10 years after they're married, and then she gets divorced or she gets widowed, she can go back and collect from them because her lien was way before that. But the question the Gemara wants to know is specifically, when does the lien begin? Does it begin the moment she gets engaged? Maybe here it's different than regarding the rights of the father, because the Takana Drabbanan started the moment they got engaged. Therefore, that's when the lien begins. Or is it only from the moment that it's written? Because only then, when it's written, does it become a milva bishtar. Nechasim mishabadim, which are properties that were purchased by other people, which are indebted to someone else, can only be collected when it's written in the document. And that was only, let's say, right before the nisuin, but not from the time she got engaged. So that's the question. When could she collect from the nechasim mishabadim? Is it from the time of the heiress, and only later on, when the ksuba was written, let's say, right before the nisuin? So the Gemara says, it's a machlekes. Amar Rav Huna says, it depends for what. He says, mana u'mesayim, mana meaning when there's an almana, and mesayim when there's a besulam, which those are intrinsic takanis drabanan. So those are always obligations. So that the woman could collect min ha'eris from the moment she got engaged, and therefore if her husband dies or she gets divorced after nisuin, then she could collect from those who purchased from the husband's properties from the moment that erisin and after that. And that because from the moment of erisin, they're meshubit, because intrinsically they're meshubit from the moment they get engaged, because that's a takana drabanan, rabbinic institution. But for Tosefes, but regarding which a lot of times the husband wants to add more to the ksuba, he says, you know what, not just the regular generic 200 or 100, I'm going to give you 1,000. That addition is only min hanisuin. That only becomes meshubed from the time when the ksuba is written, which that's when she acquires the get from him, the ksuba from him when it's actually written, and at that point in time is right before the nisuin. That part is only meshubed from them. So he says, depends on what. Rav Asama, he says, no. Echadze ve'echadze menisuin, both of them could only be collected from the time of the marriage. And the reason is because by default, when the ksuba is written, that obviously shows that she's forgiving regarding the initial lien, and she's agreeing and acquiescing to the time that's written in the ksuba, like everything that's written on it, where they sign by the chuppah right before, a few hours before, which is, says not only the primary, which is the mana or masayim, but also the tesefes is only from that date, and that's what she's accepting for that. So therefore, it's not only the tesefes, but even the ikar ksuba can only be collected from the time of the nisuin, but not from the ears. Now, on that, the Gemara asks on Rav Huna's interpretation. Umiyam Rav Huna hachi, did Rav Huna really say that the ikar part of the ksuba, which is a generic takan d'rabbanan of mana masayim, that could be collected from the time of erisin? But Vayedma, we learned the following halacha. Haitziya lav shtei ksubis. Let's say a woman, when she gets divorced, or let's say gets widowed, brings out two ksubis. Achash al-masayim. One ksuba was written that she has a ksuba of 200, which that was the first one written, and that's specifically in this order. Va'achash al-shalash meis. And then a later one, it was written that not just 200, he says, I want to give you 300. Now, Va'am Rav Huna said that she only gets to collect one of the two ksubas. But what she does have strength is that she can pick whichever ksuba she wants to collect with. So Rav Huna says, Basalig vs Mesayim, if she's coming to collect with the ksuba of only 200 and she prefers that one, and that would make sense in the case of where, if let's say the husband had sold many of his properties between the time when the first ksuba was written to the time of when the second ksuba was written. And the reason being, because if she tried to get the larger amount of 300, then it would come out that the documents of the purchases were before her ksuba, which then they wouldn't be mishubed, and she wouldn't be able to collect from them. So therefore, if she decides to choose to collect with the earlier ksuba of 200, then gaiva. She could collect 200, and then she could collect and withdraw from the lekuches. And she could do that mizman harishin, from the time when the first one was written. Shalish Meis, if she decides to collect from the Ksuba that's the larger amount of 300, then Goyvim is Mansheni that you collect from the second time when the time of that second Ksuba was written. Now that the Gemara asks, V'im Isa, and if it's true that Rav Huna holds that the obligation of the first primary of the Manam Esaim is from the first document, and it's only the addition that's from the second time, well then here also, Tikva Masayim is Man Rishon, when she's collecting with the Ksuba of the 300, not the 200, the later one. But let her at least collect 200 from the time of when the first one was written. Umeim is Man Sheini, and 100 from when the second one was written. You said that the primary part is something that's, it's from the time of Erisin. So here when there's two Ksubas, so yes, the added part of the extra 100, that should only be from the later time. But the 200 part should be able to be collected from the time of the first one. Why does he say only all 300 from the later one? So that the Gemara responds to the questioner, Ula Taimech, according to your line of questioning, I could ask you a better question. Tigvi Chamesh Meis Kulam, let her collect all 500. Why is Rav Huna saying, okay, if you choose 300, then it's like that, 200 like that. What do you mean? You have two ksubas, collect with both of them, collect 500. Mesayim Mizman Rishon, collect 200 from the first time, and Tlas Meyim Mizman Sheni, and 300 from the second time. Now, Ella, Chamesh Meis my time of Loigabas. So what's the reason why even you understand that she doesn't collect all 500? The reason being is Kivin de Leksiva law, since he did not write for her in the second Ksuba, that Tzivisi, I so desire, Vaisivalach, and I'm going to even add to you Tlas Meyam Asayim another 300 on the 200. He doesn't write that. So rather, Hachi Kamala, that obviously this is what he's telling her, that he's not adding a new Ksuba onto the first Ksuba, and that, it, in that to the contrary, you cannot collect with the second Ksuba only if the first one is already nullified. And therefore, essentially, he's telling her, Imizman Rishon Gevius, if you collect from the time of the first Ksuba, so then Gavi Masam, then you collect 200. Imizman Shein Gevius, but if you're going to collect from the time of the second one, then the first one has no relevance, only the second one. Then Gavi Tlas Meya, then you collect 300, but again, only from the later time. And as we continue at the top of Mimdal Manalev, Sachanam, behind the time of the late Gavi. So that makes sense also regarding your question, why she doesn't collect 200 from the time of the first Ksuba and only the additional 100 from the time of the second Ksuba, again, Midalei Kasavla, because he didn't write for her, that I'm adding on another 100 onto the original 200. Rather, he's writing a totally separate Ksuba, which a separate date for all 300, and he didn't write in the terminology of that he's adding on to the first document. So obviously, achuli achilti l'shabudei kama. That must be that she was meichel, she already is conceding to all of the amount of the ksuba, to the time of the second ksuba. And therefore, if she's coming to collect with the second document, she's going to collect only from the time of the second document. But regarding the, and Rashi points out, however, but that doesn't contradict Rav Huna's halacha in general. When you have a regular ksuba, where if a person is adding on more money than the regular manam asayim, there the terminology actually is written in a way of adding on. Because the words of the ksuba are v'aisifas la almaida takar rabbanan, that I'm going to add more than what the rabbis mandated and instituted as a manam asayim. Ah, so that has nothing to do with forgiving the original shibud. And therefore then that remains as it always was, which is, according to Rav Huna, from the time of Erisin. And therefore you could collect. But the extra additional, that will be for when it's written from the time of Nisuin, because that's added on, and he writes it specifically in that way. But that's not a question on the case that you're discussing over here with the two different ksubas, where there it's not written as an adding on, because it was adding on actually should get all 500. And therefore, rather there it's either that or that, and therefore if she's collecting 300 from the second one, it's all 300 from the second one and nothing from the first one, and that's why Rav Huna says over there it would be only from Mizman Hasheni. But again, not by regular ksuba, where there it's written as an adding on. So the adding on was the time of when it's written, but the primary manam asayim would be from the Sha'asa Erisin.